Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look. Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them. And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hello, everyone. This is Ian Babcock, your host, Chat by the Pitch. This is part two with Coach Greg Gillies, the soccer specialist. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
I think that's most sports, most parents, most kids don't go outside to play.
That's what I mean. That's why I'm saying it's a bigger issue than just soccer culture now. Kids just don't go out and play any sports on their own.
I think part of it is, and we talked about it earlier. I don't know if it's when we started this or not, but the issue is, it's a growing trend, is that we have too many options here in the United States. A lot of countries don't have kids playing video games, don't have kids on tablets like we do, or on electronics. And a lot of countries have parks where families feel comfortable sending their kids. Walking distance. I live in Texas, and I can tell you my community park is about a half mile walk from my house. I'm not sending my 6 and 10 year old kid over there to go play.
Right.
One, I don't, it's not how to describe it. It's a comfort thing. I don't trust our society anymore. That's where I'm struggling as a parent.
I get that. But I think, I think you're going to get that because you're always going to get those stories. It's just like the whole travel issue, because just geographically, obviously, the United States is very different than the rest of the world, right? So you have that issue as well. So you're always good. It's just like the whole club thing. Like you hear parents talk about how they're traveling an hour and 15 minutes each way for practice 4 times a week because there's nothing in their area closer that's good enough for their kid. And I don't say that disparagingly. Some parents think that way, but that may legitimately be true. But you also have areas like where I am, where I could go outside and throw a baseball and I'm going to hit 35 clubs, right? I think it's hard to say that something like that is an issue in America because, for example, there's a huge park right near me and where lots of people go and parents take their kids and the kids are doing their own thing, but they're never playing soccer. And there's the space there to do it. They're on the swings. And also with the tablets, like to me, that's a parent issue. That's not a we're America and we're spoiled issue because that just reminds me of a story way back when we were in, we had just finished, I forget the age now, but I think it was, so it was even before the age change, which we didn't know. So basically all my players were in the same grade, right? So they had just finished second grade. So this was end of May, where they're just finishing, end of May, end of season team party. And I'm talking to one of the parents, and her kid goes to a private Catholic school. There are 60 girls in her grade at the school, right? Her daughter, she's second grade, what, 8, 9 years old? Okay. Her mom is telling me how difficult it is with her child now because her daughter, 7, 8, 9 years old, is one of only 3 out of the 60 who does not have her own smartphone. That's a parent issue. Parents do not have to give 8-year-olds smartphones. Parents are insane for giving 8-year-olds smartphones. And I always get the excuse, I need to be able to reach them or they need to be able to reach you. Really? Because every generation before them, we grew up and we survived just fine. And I'll tell you what, most of our parents had no idea where we were most of the time. Okay, that's another issue. Like the idea of not being able to go to a park a half mile away is insane to my generation. But
insane
and I get
to me.
There are differences. Right, you are. So I think we're building in a lot of excuses as to why we're not doing what needs to be done if development of soccer players is the goal.
I think we're relying on a system, and I think it's the free play. I think, how do I describe it?
Yeah.
I think we, like here, a lot of our spaces that we are able to play soccer on are actually locked up. The goals are
that,
turned.
Right, I hear up. That too. And I get that that's a problem because you get private things and clubs are paying money for the field and you don't want to tear them up. There is that too. And there are places who have locked up field space where they can play.
But there's all the schools here. We used to take, you could take any, the schools are unlocked. If the school fields aren't being used, someone said use them.
Exactly.
Just be well,
and that's my
and
point.
I think that's the problem.
Again, if you go like foot, if you're playing outdoors, right? It's not a soft surface. And futsal, obviously, it's a little different, right? The contact is less. You're not doing the slide tackling. We played right. I can hear somebody now listen to this coming up with the excuse, we can't do that where we are. That's not the point. I get there are different places, but I'm just to use that as an example. We played soccer on basketball courts. We played soccer literally in the street. Now, we would do it in a neighborhood where it wasn't a ton of traffic, but yes, and you probably might remember this too. You'd be in the middle of playing whatever it is, football, hockey, soccer, in the street, and there's always, you'd hear the car, right? And if you were using goals, you'd drag them out of the way, and everyone would get off the street, and the car would go by, and then you'd continue playing. You know what I mean?
Just got lazy like us and put the goals in the corner so you didn't have to move things.
Hey, we didn't need nice, beautiful, taken care of, manicured fields with lines and big goals in order to play.
No. I think kids don't play outside.
Yes, in general, they don't.
At all.
Right.
It's hard just to get them out. I think we were kicked out of the house. I want to say we were kicked out of the house. We were highly encouraged to leave the house.
You could say kicked out. Yeah, obviously it wasn't exactly like that, but that was basically true. And our summers were, you eat breakfast and you go outside. And maybe you come back for lunch. Maybe. You come back for dinner. And then you go back outside until it's dark.
I remember growing up, and this is something. Yeah, I'm thinking back to my childhood. And I would ride my bike the 16th of the mile or quarter mile down the road to my friend's house. And then we would ride from his house. I think it was about, it wasn't a half mile, maybe 3/8 of a mile down the road from his house to the next friend's house. And we would play basketball in their driveways until it was dark. And I still remember riding my bike home at 10 o'clock at night.
Yes.
And 12, 13 years old. At 10 o'clock at night from playing basketball from 8 o'clock in the morning until
Absolutely.
10 o'clock at night, then getting up and redoing it the next day.
I played
basketball because my friends played basketball, not because I wanted to.
Yeah, I think my parents and my friend's parents, they had no idea how far we traveled on bikes and where we would go and what we would do. Now, I'm not saying that we would do bad things. I'm just saying we were outside from morning till night and we would go find things to do. And we would, sometimes we'd end up quite far from home because we're just like bored and we're outside and we're going to find something to do. And I was just thinking this come across some people. I was like, oh yeah, that's always, that generation's always talking about how much softer that. No, just go out, let your kids go out and play. And I look, if you want them, if it has to be in the backyard or like you have to be able to see them because of whatever. But the point we're making is that has shifted.
Yes.
Right. It has absolutely shifted in general. It's not just a soccer thing. We don't have a soccer culture, but it's not just the soccer thing now when it's talking about kids going out and playing. We would go out, we'd make, even if we weren't playing an actual sport, we'd make up games, make up stuff to do because being outside was what we did. We were outside.
We made tree forts. We made cabins.
Yeah.
I can tell you the things we did. And I think you're on the right page here, is that as a society as a whole, our players aren't, any kids aren't going outside. And it's very,
what's wrong looking for?
Discourage going outside. I think part of it is.
I think it is.
I think it's a culture shift. And I think we as parents have to. I think I have a 10-year-old child and I know that kids that are older than him and my daughter are slightly different. Like my daughter is just scared to go outside by herself. It deals nothing with not wanting to.
Right.
I can go out there and sit with my laptop in the backyard and she doesn't want me to be part of whatever she's doing.
Right.
She's happy.
Right.
My son, on the other hand, who grew up during COVID, where learning how to play on his own because they didn't, you think they would, but we were home with him. So I played with him because it was a good break from work every day. And he didn't learn how to play by himself. And I think there's some of that more so, not because of COVID, but just in general. Kids aren't very independent outside of their families. And
right.
My favorite example, if you look at the kids that are turning 16, 17 years old, my wife and I talk, I'm 40. I'm just going to say that right now. I'm 40 and my wife and I talk about when we turned 16, everyone wanted to get their driver's license to have their freedom to do what they want. And today that's not going on. They don't want to get their license.
Right.
It's a fight to have them get their license. Yeah. And some kids, I won't say it's all kids, but I'll say there's more kids moving the direction of not wanting to drive than wanting to drive. And we're way off.
We went down a rabbit hole. But one thing I had in my mind, you said something before all this that got me thinking about it, that I think is really important when we were talking about coaches and a lot of coaches both feeling pressure to win. You were talking about the ego stuff, actually.
Yeah.
And that made me think of one of the problems too is, and I think I touched on this earlier, is that even coaches, first of all, let me start out by saying everybody has an ego. So that plays into everything. The degree of which it affects what you do, that varies from person to person, right? Like you talked about the pride and stuff. We're going to go into that. Pride is actually one of the seven deadly sins. So I don't know why you're telling your kid you're proud of them, but that's a whole nother issue. Like that shouldn't be, but anyway, you're talking about, so coaches that are player centric and their real focus is player development, not results, not whether the team's winning games or getting tournament trophies and all that. You have many coaches, I shouldn't say many coaches in the grand scheme, but many coaches that are player centric like that are at times not, and it's not necessarily because of their ego. It's because of they want to do what's best for their players, but in order to do what's best for their players need to be playing for them. Therefore, they also have to appease maybe the club or the parents by doing certain things and playing certain ways and winning enough games so that the parents with the ego don't jump ship to another club who's marketing how many trophies their teams win and what leagues they play in and all of the other stuff that is really irrelevant to player development. You know what I'm saying? So it's a struggle for good coaches because they feel pressure to be results oriented, at least in terms of the team, at least to a degree, to keep everyone from jumping ship to where they may actually not be in a good situation for the player, but the parent thinks they are because the team they're on plays in X League and they go to this tournament and they win this many games, which has nothing to do with your own player's development, but it's what a lot of people focus on.
And I think parents confuse leagues with development and yes. level of play.
Yes.
And it's been a very hard lesson to learn that whatever alphabet league you're playing, and if it's the highest league, doesn't mean your player's developing. I had a coworker tell me that they regret letting their son play with their friends because their son rode the bench because he was playing a year up. If he would have played age, he would have been a starter and might have had a chance to go off to college on a scholarship. But right. instead, he rode the bench for a year. That team disbanded because of the age. And it wasn't playing then when he had a chance to actually play. I'm assuming at this point in time it was grade, not by age. But his friends they left, and then he was left by himself. And he lost all that time of minutes of playing in games because he rode the bench. And he goes, that's the only regret I have with their son's development. It kind of made me think, like, and it wasn't even about playing in a league. It was him playing with his friends. And I crack up because I think families think that if you play with the same kids that are your friends and the team's not growing, when you switch teams, it's all doing a change. Or if you switch coaches, it's all going to change. And I really have a hard time believing. It's like we've played on, I don't know how many teams now, we've played on 4 or 5 different teams over the years. And only one of them I felt like it's us really moving our player. It's because of teams falling apart or just was assigned a team and it wasn't really the coach that we wanted. Like, my kid has to play at this level and they have to play with these kids in order to get there. And at the end of the day, it's like my wife and I turn to ourselves, what's in the best interest of our player, both of them,
right,
to grow and develop? I don't care what league he's playing in, because at the end of the day, if he's talented enough, he'll be seen and asked to go join another team. That means he's growing as an individual. The coach, right, whoever he has as a coach, is doing their job developing him. And we call it his moment to shine, and we have not had that. And I feel like a lot of it is because the coach is either A, just coaching to coach because it's an income, or they're under so much pressure to win from the club that they're only going to play players where they need them to win. It right. may not be what's in the best case of their player, of your player or my player, but it's in the best interest of the team. And to me, right. that's where the whole ego and parents and winning at all costs. It's yeah. like we join a team. We don't expect to win. I always ask, what is your expectation to win? And they said, I want to win every game we play. I'm like, okay, but what is your expectation for your record? I go, I know you want to win every game, but what is your expectation? Are you looking at winning 3/4 of your games, half your games? What is it? And if they tell me, I'm happy if we win half our games and we place in our tournaments, unless we're doing something otherwise, I'm happy with that answer. Like, right. my son joined a brand new team. All the players never played together. First 6 months was a struggle. Second 6 months, they were one of the best teams for their age division in the area.
Right.
And for them to be able to grow like that, it's like we were really impressed. The team actually grew, developed, and played as one unit. One of the worst teams in the bracket. And it's like, what is going on? And we look back, it's all these other players had some very high level coaching, and this coach is not the right fit for my player to develop right. and grow. And I think looking at winning as all costs, like I said, I'm happy with a 500 record. I think parents need to get off this thing like my kid has to be on the top team, has to be on this. If they're U14 and younger, they don't care. As long as they're developing. I don't know if you see it this way, but as I'm doing this more, and the more I understand the model, and I don't know if you've, it was in one of the social media forums, Tim Summers posted about it, and it was in one of the comments talking about the model of play, which is you I think I messed this up. U11 and younger is play to play. Train to play.
Right.
You,
okay. Yeah.
Train to
yeah.
train is the verbiage. Then from U14 and younger, U to U12 is training to develop. And U15 and older is training to win. And I think we have that model starting at the third level at U6. We're training to win.
Right.
We aren't training to develop. We aren't training to teach them how to move the ball or just to run around and have fun on the soccer.
Yeah, I think it's train to win, but it's not always just for the sake of winning. It's like you said, I think a lot of adults just equate development with winning. So it's not, now for some, it's just win at all costs. But I think for a lot, they just think if you won three games one season and you won five the next, even if half your team changed and you're in a different league, but that's somehow developed. Or like you were saying, if your kid's on this team in, you know, the, say, sixth level of this league, and now they move to this other team who plays the third level, that magically means your kid has gotten that much better, which, of course, is absurd, right? That's just not how it works. And then the other, we talked about this briefly before, is there are sports, I shouldn't say where winning and development are the same, but there are sports where it can be more equivalent because there aren't as many things you can do to win that aren't as good for development. Like I think baseball is the most likely. Now, of course, you could take the kid that's maybe advanced for his age physically and he's your number four hitter and cracking home runs and this and that. But basically, the shortstop position is the shortstop position. Right, like you do the things you do at each position, and the skill level thing is high. Okay, so I'm not putting down baseball, but in terms of like you talk the soccer IQ and all the stuff you have to process, it's nothing like soccer. Right, if a ground ball is hit to me as a shortstop, I react to it, I feel it, and I throw it to first. There's a guy at first, I might throw it to second, but still, it's very limited okay, there's a ground ball coming to me, what do I have to do? As opposed to I'm playing soccer 11v11, there's a line drive coming at me and I'm in the middle of the pitch. What do I have to do? It's a completely different.
Where is everyone at? Where is everyone moving?
Yeah, there's so much more to it in that respect. Yeah. And to your point, and another thing again that makes things more complicated is, and again, I'll use baseball. Now, a team may have advantages, like I said, early puberty or whatever, and one team has kids that are crushing the ball, but in terms of winning and losing, at whatever that age is, 9 times out of 10, the team that happens to be better at that time, if they win, it's because they're better, right? That day anyway. Whereas soccer,
right.
Watching the soccer, you know, that's not necessarily true in soccer. You can, especially at youth ages where the finishing is not the level of the pros, you can dominate a soccer game and you can lose. Right?
Yes.
So even in soccer, like when you talk about winning half our games, even that isn't necessarily a true indicator of how each of those games went. Because
right.
You can also get dominated and get that one lucky bounce, that scramble in the box or a corner or whatever it is, and the ball finds its way in the back of the net, and you win, even though the other team had the ball 80% of the time, they spent it in your end, they cranked out 30 shots. You barely had the ball.
We had the last World Cup. Croatia had the ball.
Yeah, yeah.
2% of the game, and they end up winning.
Another great example was back in 2018 when Russia beat Spain. Spain had the ball like 75% of the game, literally in Russia's defensive third, and Russia wins the game. And I think that's even more so in the youth game.
Yes.
In terms of, so that happens too. Because I could tell you, I look back at some seasons, and I'll look at seasons where we had not a great record and versus another season where if you just look at our record, oh yeah, we're really good. And then I'll take it into my memory game by game and also who we were playing. And I'm like, that was actually, that season we couldn't win, that was actually a better season. Oh, like, okay, it's like we lost literally every game by a goal. You know what I mean? And we played really well in a lot of the games and we got more chances than the other team. We just didn't get those breaks to finish
right,
to get the win. Because we had a game, one of the seasons where we won the whole thing, we lost one game, and it was the first game, right? And we were in a new conference, whatever you want to call it. So we're playing teams we had never played division before. Yeah. Yeah, we called it flights here in the
more
flight.
Local,
yeah,
probably.
It's all the same. Yeah, it's all the same. But yeah, I just wanted to make sure you knew it. And our first game, so it's new teams. We all know what's going on. We moved up. We lost our first game 5-0. And we just got, and it was a legit 5-0. We got dominated. Hey. And I'm thinking in my head, oh God, okay, what am I going to do to keep the kids together all season? Because this is going to be a long one, right? And that was the last game we lost. But here's the thing. We lost that 5-0. The last game of the season, we won 4-0. Okay, we played 10 games. Okay, so we've got 8 other games left. We didn't lose any of them. We won one game, 2-0. Now we've got 7 games. All 7 of those games were one goal games. It was a great season in terms of we were in the right place playing teams that were very competitive, but teams we could, on any given day, could whip us or we could whip them, right?
Right.
There weren't, other than that first blowout, we were just, I just think we were just out of it right away. It was like, it was a different gear. Because by the way, the second time we played that team, we played 5 teams twice. Second time we played that team, we went down to their place and we beat them 1-0. But let me tell you, they had a coach, and that was their only loss. They had, I think, one more tie than we did, so we won the division by a point. They were a good team, but their parents were not happy after beating us 5-0, as you can imagine. Yeah. What I'm saying is, because you couldn't look at our record and just think that was an awesome season, but not because you looked at our record and think they lost one game, they were great. No, it was great because, one, every game was competitive, except the first and last, right? And what I really noticed in terms of looking at it from a development standpoint versus the season before is the only difference now is we capitalized on chances, right? Like the season before, we were like, I think we were like 3-4-3 or something like that. But we could have won any of the games we played. But there were those little things, and I'm sure you've seen plenty of youth games like this where you're like, oh, you have to score on that play. Like, how do you not score there? So it was, from my perspective, I didn't look at it as losing record to winning the conference with only one loss. I looked at it as we elevated our game a little bit by taking advantage of those crucial points in games that determine wins and losses. Does that make sense? And I think that speaks a lot to player development that gets ignored.
The one thing I love as a parent watching soccer, and I hate to say this and the way I'm going to phrase this, but the best way I was ever explained soccer was it's the first team that makes, the team that makes the most mistakes loses.
Yeah. Oh, it's a game.
Normally.
I phrase it, soccer is a game of mistakes in a different way than other sports are. It is a game of mistakes. You will make them. You will make a lot of them.
And watching it at even the pro level, even at the English Premier level, even at the Euros right now, a lot of big games were lost because of simple mistakes we see at a U6, U7 match.
Right. Oh,
an own goal. Or,
great example.
And parents, I don't think parents realize that.
Did you watch Now, England ended up losing. They shouldn't have, but they should have because Denmark played great. But England was winning was my point. England was up 1-0 on Denmark, right? I don't know if you saw it. Did you see that goal? Did you see a highlight of it?
I saw the highlight, yeah.
Okay. So if you noticed, and the announcer, I don't think ever really mentioned it, but to me, and it's just perfect that you said that, because I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, to me, that goal was scored because Denmark's outside back made a 8-year-old mistake, right? That ball, you had a couple of passes, that ball was played wide to the winger for England, but it had no chance of being completed. The Denmark defender was in the right spot. He turns to the inside. He's got the ball. If you're watching him, he slows down. His eyes are up. He's looking to his keeper is where he's going to go with that ball. But for some reason, he completely forgot about the England player that was to the outside who that pass was to. And he thought he had all the time in the world.
Yes.
It should have been a basic play for the Denmark, for Denmark's outside back to get, gather that ball, play it back to his keeper and go from there. But for some reason, he had a brain freeze. He slowed up. He acted like he had all the time in the world and there was no other, no player for England in the vicinity. It was like, it was a really bad mistake.
And I think sometimes, like I'll ask my son, because we'll watch, rewatch his games. If they have a VO or whatever it is, with Trace, whatever it may be using the game film. And I'll ask him like, did you see this player here? Or did you see this? Because I'm watching his head during the game.
Right.
And he didn't see that player. And he'll admit when he doesn't see something and he'll admit when he does, or if he remembers or if he doesn't remember. But we have a long chat about the game and it might be 2-3 days later. And I'm like, I'm quizzing him on things that happened. Like, oh, did he see this and this? And as a parent, I'm just trying to figure out what's going through his head because you never know. And sometimes he'll say, yeah, I didn't see that guy there. I didn't see my player. But the next game, there's his teammate. He's playing left back and his teammate's right in the same spot again. Guess where he passes that ball? And not, I never saw him scan, but he knows his teammate's there. Blind passes the ball down the line.
Right.
Sure enough, his teammate gets the ball.
Right.
And it's just because he's learning. I don't think parents, we as parents spend enough time to give our kids credit for how smart they are at a young age playing this game.
Yeah.
Even as they get older, you watch the pros and they make silly mistakes that,
like,
oh, my son,
game of mistakes.
And they're going to be starting the next game no matter what, because they play at a high level. They're capable of recovering. And as I'm thinking back, did I make a big deal about that mistake with my player?
Right.
And I think back, no, because I don't yell at him when he makes a mistake on the pitch.
Yeah.
I yell at him because he's not hustling hard enough because he's a kid.
And
the game is about, like you said, it's about making mistakes and making
a lot of them. Yeah. And they're going to make a lot of them. And that's how they learn. And to that point, and this stands out till this day, because I think it was like U11. We finally had a rough season. We had lost a couple of really good players from U10 to our A team, and we moved up a couple of flights. Like it was like it was a rough season. Now, again, looking at it from a development standpoint, up went out something that was really good. But to your point, one of the things that stood out, because they were not used to losing. It wasn't that we were winning all the time, but whether we were 3-4-3 or 5-2-3 or whatever, we were to that point very lucky in that it was always competitive. We might have one or two games that were a blowout, but for most of the part, our games were always very competitive, which is all you want. So the record would depend on whether, you know, like you said, the little thing happened that we capitalized on or it happened to us. And that would determine whether it was a win or loss. Right. So we finally got to the season where it was just rough and it was a struggle. And so of course, I'm thinking as a coach, one of my big things is their head. Where's their head at and this and that. And so we would talk about that stuff and what the approach and what we're learning. And I really try certain things you got to explain. That's what coaches do. But I really try and ask questions if I think. And one of my players even admitted, because we talked about the losing and this and that. And one of my players said, and I was so glad she said this, because we talked about what we're learning and this and that. She said, the one good thing, she said, I'm learning stuff because I don't learn from winning. Like,
no.
When you make mistakes, but you win the game, you don't ever think about those mistakes again. I mean, your coach might point them out later, but as a player, as an athlete, when you win, you don't think about the mistakes that you made that could have seriously caused you to lose or that may cause you to lose in the future. But when you lose, you're losing because of those mistakes. And now you're aware of those mistakes because they are causing you to lose and you don't like to lose. Right. And so losing is also important in that regard. You need to lose. Just like you learn from mistakes, you learn from losing and the mistakes you made that led to losing. And to this point, I'll tell you, that was our worst season ever. We finished 1-9, okay? And the first five games, so again, we played five teams twice. The first five games, we gave up 20 goals. We had never given up more than 11 or 12 goals in a 10-game season. We gave up 20 goals in our first five. We've been outscored 20-4. We played the same five teams again. Only won one game, but we also only gave up 9 goals as opposed to 20 the first time. And the team we beat, crazily enough, down at their place, had one loss all season and was the team that won the flight. And we beat them in the next to last game of the season. So that I don't, and it's funny because little things, I still see it today. I don't know about you, but for most of the players I coached, there wasn't much celebrating after scoring. Like, they were all business. There wasn't much outward celebrating after a big win. I had never seen them so happy and seen so much smiles and seen such a team celebration than after that win that was their only win in a 10-game season. You know what I mean? They went through a lot to get to it. And they appreciated it because of everything they went through to get to it. And they never hung their heads. I mean, look, you're going to get frustrated with losses, right? But they never stopped listening. The effort never declined. And when that happens, you get rewarded. Going way back to the whole, you talking about your son and effort things. Effort has to be there. Yeah. It always has to be there. It has to be there when things are going. It has to be there even more when things are not going well. And if it's there, you will eventually get rewarded for it. And it's important the players know that.
And I think that's something that is taught at home at times. I don't always think it is a player thing. I'm not blaming parents, but I understand we all have lives and things to get done. But effort's taught at home. I really look at I'm one of 6 kids. And if there's anything I've watched all of my siblings, we all know how to work.
Right.
We all know how to work hard. We all have our opinions of each other's work ethics as siblings, but
of course,
every one of my siblings, I feel, have worked very hard to be where they're at. And that's something that my dad ingrained in us as how to work. My dad was a very smart man, but wasn't like a college educated man, but knew how to work and work hard and how to put a grind in. And I don't think that trait is being taught in good times and bad times. And I think, I don't know, this goes back to pop psychology, whatever you want to call it. It's something that coaches have to deal with. And I don't think they're on the soccer field and it's 95 degrees today and they have to go play 90 minutes of soccer and it's too hot for them. What did people do 20 years ago?
Yeah.
They just went there and played. Right. There's precautions you have to take, which I'm all for. You give them cooling rags. You make sure they're comfortable. But at the same time, if this is what little Johnny and little Susie's dream is, they're going to play in more extreme weather than that. They're going to play in very cold weather. They're going to play in much hotter weather.
Yeah.
And there's nothing they'll have to do about it. And yes, they are kids and they can't regulate the same as adults, but they still have to learn to play through and work hard.
And it's what you're teaching. Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I think that is a struggle nowadays with parenting. And I dealt with that with, luckily not with too many, but it's also what I think that isn't understood is that you are teaching your kids, for better or worse, skills or habits that are going to be needed or are going to hurt you in life outside of youth sports, outside of youth soccer. Because, and I always said, and speaking of dads, this came from my dad too. If you sign your kid up for a team, now they are part of that team. And the things you do and allow your kid to do affect all those other kids. And you have made a commitment. And if you can't honor that commitment, then you should not make it. And for example, I think one of the worst that I had, I had a player, and to be fair, I know from getting to know the player and the parents, it wasn't the player. I had a player who there were real issues with the parents. Never knew if the kid was going to show up, when the kid was going to show up. The kid would miss practices that I thought she was coming to because she said she was, because at the last minute, her mom's friends called and the mom goes out to dinner on a Wednesday night with her friends and leaves the kid at home instead of getting the kid to practice. And I said, this is for all the parents who say this excuse is legitimate. So here's how I phrase it, because I had this one player. I said, look, if I have a player who is absent more times than 10 of my other players combined, those are not legitimate excuses. That is a problem. And you are teaching your kid that it's okay to make a commitment and then ignore it.
Yes.
And that is not a good thing.
No, I can give a great example of that. We've had a coach, we did not like the style they coached. And Landon was at every practice, made extra practice, played in extra games because he was invited by the coach. But as soon as our contract was up, we left.
Right.
And we're not going to change who we are because of external factors that we can't control, because that's what the club gave us as a coach. But we told him, like, you sign a contract. It doesn't matter if you like the coach, like your teammates, you go to practice, you do what you need to do. And when your contract's up, you can leave. But not until, you're not going to quit mid-season for whatever reason. And this is something that is, your team is expecting you to show up. I go, if this was an individual sport event, that doesn't really matter. Yeah. It's completely different.
Yep.
And you're playing a team sport.
I say that to those. I said, look, if you want to come and go and you want it to basically be optional, do an individual sport. Because you know what? If you don't show up for that tennis tournament, then that kid who was playing your kid just wins and advances to the next round, and that's fine. But don't,
and I don't put him in a team sport. See it that way.
Yeah. Don't put him in a team sport. But one thing, and I had a circle of way back, go back to the ego thing, and I'll give you a great example from the parent side that's a problem. In the one time, one summer, this is, yeah, one summer we need another player, but it's not the end of the world if we don't get another player. And so we got contacted by a mom whose kid was on, and this was like late July. So they were already on it. It was set, fall's coming up, fall season. But for whatever reason, the team that this kid was on fell apart. Like, they were no longer going to be playing in the fall.
Right.
Just, it fell apart. And so she's looking for a team for a kid, which I can completely understand. So we were at, it was 8-8, we had 11. So 12 is the fine number. And so she came out to a practice and things went fine. Good, solid player. She would fit in. I talked to, or one of the parents of one of the kids on my team talked to me and said, look, I just want you to let you know that just the mom is a nightmare. Just so you know. But the kid was a good, solid player, nice kid, good attitude. She got along with the other, with the team and all that, offered her a spot. And to the point, what the parent I know said too, basically phrased it was, her kid's soccer is about her, not her daughter, right? So here's what happened. So we gave an offer and then she declined. And the reason she declined is because, and you know how we talk about players shift teams all the time. Like, stuff happens where even a really good team could be like, oh, all of a sudden we need a player. Like, we're short a player because this player quit the sport or whatever. And sometimes when that happens, you pretty much will take anybody because you need to fill that spot. It's the last minute. So her kid got offered a spot on a team a year up. And this was before the age change. Like, it was legitimately an older team, right? But not only was it a year up, we were playing, I think at the time, we were like a mid-flight team at the time. I think it was young. So there were a lot of teams. So it may have been like 16, 17 flights. And I think we were like 7. And the kid's team that this kid was on that fell apart was on 6. So she, and it was also at the time, U11 was actually the change to 11v11, right? So here's what this lady did, because it was about her. Instead of playing on a team that's basically in the same flight that her kid fit in with, personality-wise and skill-wise, she ended up getting a spot on a team a year older, who is now also 11v11, right? So that's that jump as well. 8v8 too, not 9v9, right. 8v8 to 11v11. To a team that's a year older, to a team that's also in its age group in the very top flight. Okay? And here's the other thing, right? Mom was crazy enough to say, she said they had tried out for 4 teams. She said an email to me that we were her daughter's first choice, that we were where her daughter wanted to play, but she was going to take that spot because, you know what, that looks good. And I'm telling you, because this other parent that I told you was on the team pointed it out to me. As soon as they took that spot, her mom was all over social media about how proud, there's that word, how proud she was of her daughter for playing a year up and going to 11v11 and playing on a top flight team. And I had nothing to lose. So not in a mean way, but especially when her mom told me that we were the team she wanted to play for. I said to her, I said, look, I don't care if you come play for us. However, I advise you against doing what you're doing, because here's what's going to happen. Your daughter is going to be, and I didn't say the word outclassed to her, but your daughter's going to be outclassed. And it is a team that I'm telling you is not going to be like everybody gets to play. Your daughter is not going to play. She's going to struggle with the age and the 11v11 change, and is not going to be good for her. Guess what happened? Her daughter didn't play in the fall barely. So of course the mom didn't, the coach quit before the spring season. And then because someone else, the newer, kept tabs and would update me from that time on, which is a U10 to U15. I lost track after that kid had been on 12 different teams. Her mother ruined her because her soccer was about mom.
I don't know how to,
but it just drives me nuts. And I want parents to hear that, because I want them to, because you will get parents to say, parents will ignore me. And you also get parents to say, oh, you know what? I can see how I've had a bit of that attitude at times, and I need to change that for my kids.
I don't know how we change that, but that's a culture thing. That's very much right in our society.
It is a tough thing. It's not just. Yeah, it was. And that's why I say I tell that story in hopes that, because you'll have parents that will completely ignore that are just like it. You'll have parents who maybe really aren't like that, but they get caught up in the whole what club you play for and what league, because they're around other parents to talk about it, that might recognize, hey, you know what? I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that to my kid. And by the way, since we're already going forever and I don't stop talking, the very that summer, okay? So the next summer, so she played in the fall for that team, quit, didn't play in the spring. The Memorial Day weekend tournament, local tournament that we played in, okay? That girl played in as a guest with our club's A team. Hey, so my age group now, she's guesting for the A team. She would have been fit in with us perfect. She was mid-level. She shouldn't have been. But anyway, here's the real kicker. She accepted a spot on that team after guesting in the Memorial Day tournament.
Right.
Then in the summer, have you heard of PDA? They're pretty well known nationally. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So there's PDA around here. So in the summer, she played on at nowadays teams basically go year round, but even then a lot of teams would, they, the clubs would have a select team just for the summer that could be players from anywhere. So she played on the PDA select team, even though she was playing for us, for our A team the coming fall. It turns out, happens at times over the summer, that PDA team lost players. Plus they love to stack their rosters because they charge a lot of money. So they want to make the fees.
Yes.
They offered her a spot on the actual team. Now, keep in mind, this is July, right? Tryouts were in April. Teams are settled. They're done. They're ready. They're starting their fall season, basically. She jumped ship, even after paying a deposit, jumped ship, got three other parents to jump ship as well, because, you know, it's PDA instead of a township club. So our A team went from 13 players a couple weeks before officially starting fall season in 8v8 to 9. Which, of course, would greatly affect my team, right? So now we got it all worked out. Like, luckily, the A-team coach and I had a good relationship. We got things worked out. We figured it out. But basically, because of that mom's insanity and ego, she almost destroyed two entire teams. Because her ego was PDA, right? My kid's going to be on PDA instead of the township club.
I'm
sorry, but I just had to tell that story, man.
I mean, as a parent, like, those are stories that people need to hear, because as a parent, I think we have been pretty level-headed as parents. I'm not saying that I'm always level-headed, but my wife is normally pretty level-headed. When it comes to this type of stuff, I've been burned in the past. Like, I have recommended people to follow. Go check out this coach.
Right.
I'm not saying join it. Go check it out.
Right.
Do your own homework. See if it's the right fit for your player. If I want to be known for anything as a parent, listen, talking to other parents, is finding the right coach for your player. And there, like I said, there's not enough information on all the coaches. And me being me, I like to do all my homework. I like to have all my ducks in the row.
And they change a lot. And
yes,
that's one thing that makes it tough, is you really, both as a coach in terms of how the parent's going to be in terms of being a nightmare or just even getting their kid there and attendance and all, you have no idea. And as a parent too, you have no idea. You may have the kid do a couple of practices, see him at tryouts. Everybody's on their best behavior. No one really knows how it's going to go until you're already into it.
Yes.
And then and it's too late.
If it's a nightmare, it's too late. You got to at least go through the year.
Yes. And I always, my recommendations, we will find coaches that we like. And then we will, as crazy as it sounds, we'll go watch them play. We'll find their schedule. Because you can, if you know what leagues they're playing in, because you can ask.
They'll tell you what league they're playing in.
Sure.
You go pull up their schedule in the league. And it just takes a little bit of time to do the work. And you go watch them play. You don't tell them that you're showing up. You just watch them play. We had a coach, we watched five games.
Went 4 or 5 games. I'm pretty sure it was 5. They're minutes from the house. And we watched 3 before we even tried out. Then 2 after he tried out with the team. And the coach was like, was shocked that we came to that many games to check him out.
Right.
And we still didn't sign with him.
Right.
But he was one of the finalists for our player. It was just, Landon liked him as a coach. It was just other things that we saw in the background. And it dealt with parents.
Yeah.
It dealt nothing with him as a coach.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate.
And that's how stat, like that's, as a parent, we dictated what team we were joining.
Yeah.
And that based on another parent's actions. And it just blows my mind. They're like, but that's important to go see. How are the parents behaving?
Right.
If a parent came and watched my son's tank team, would I be embarrassed? Probably, because I don't yell at the players. I don't yell at the coach. I yell at the ref because I don't care about safety. And every now and then I'll yell about a handball. But because they're so subjective and angles is a key factor,
yeah,
I will keep my mouth shut. But if someone comes in from behind and slide tackling, I will lose my cool because it's safety.
Well, yeah, I don't care. That's
the big issue I will have as a coach too is when it becomes a safety issue.
And I'll yell at the ref and I won't yell at the coach because I'm not going to tell the coach how to do his job. But if it's a 15-year-old kid, I'll keep my mouth shut. If it is a 34-year-old man that's might be slightly out of shape, that's not playing position correctly, yes, I will yell at them. I've gotten better over the years, I'll say, but it's my wife gets embarrassed at the end.
Well,
we go to FC Dallas games and I'll yell at the ref because I know he's out of position.
It's funny you say that because my assistant coach was very quiet. He rarely said anything. So when he did, it was like, wow. But we had one game, we had an official center ref like that. And it was, the calls were really bad or lack of calls too. But there were then it also became player safety issues. And
out of nowhere, my assistant coach yells out,
"You do know you have to leave the center circle, right?" Because that was it. It was I don't say this to be mean, but he's a soccer ref. He could have, and he's getting paid. He could have stood to lose 50 pounds. And so he wasn't going to leave the center circle, right? So he's trying to call the whole game from the center circle, which is insane. Absolutely insane. But it's tough. And the reason I tell these stories, like I said, is because you hope you get the people listening that are open-minded or maybe they're new to the sport. And so maybe it hopefully affects their what they do and the decisions they make in a positive way going forward, because I think that is a huge part of it, is how parents and parents interact and also how coaches and parents interact could make everything so much better for the players. And look, it's a learning process in everything. And I think that's the key, is I think one of the reasons I'm so passionate about it and where I am with what I do teach is because I love to learn and I'm open-minded. The way, if you gave me a brand new U7 or U8 team now, how I would run the practices is very different from the very first time
I was coaching a U7, U8 team.
Because everything has evolved, because I'm trying to learn and be a better coach. And so I shouldn't be doing what I was doing 12, 13 years ago.
And I think that's key. I think as coaches, they all need to evolve. But parents, we have to evolve, I feel like, more. I think part of it's education on our side, and the other side of it is the emotional side. And it may not be on the pitch. It might be how we talk to our player at home. It might be how we interact with our player on the emotional side. I don't think that's talked enough. That's something that I have spent a lot of time researching, is the psychological side of the game, because I feel that is something that's left out, and we're seeing it more and more prevalent now in all sports, not just football or soccer, whatever you want to call it.
That's why I wrote my book.
Right. It's something to me that is very critical. It's why I've been trying to get on two more sports psychologists, because I feel like that is something that is so important. The mental side of the game is something that we don't talk enough about. And I think it's critical that we do talk about it and do encourage it and do bring it to the forefront, because I don't think we're getting all the talent out of our players, because they're being held back because of some type of mental block, or parents on the sideline, or a coach on the other side of the sideline. It's something going on that the player needs to find a way to let it out safely. And I don't think there's always the best option for that. And I feel like a lot of players, when they get out of their comfort zone out of their comfort zone and pushed into something that is higher pressure and more, a lot of them perform much better than we give them credit to. And we as parents or sometimes coaches don't give them the option to have that, to be cooked in the pressure cooker, so to speak, and actually perform. And I think we're losing some great talent from not doing that more. And but there's also, can they handle it mentally of that side of the game, and how do you prep them? And we can talk for hours on that. So my favorite question to ask at the end of all my interviews is, who has been your greatest influence as a player, and who has been your greatest influence as a coach? Because you have coached and you have played, because you get the double whammy.
Oh, wow. You mean my greatest influence?
It could be a coach.
As a player, you mean like when I played?
When you played as a player, who is the greatest influence? It could be a coach, it could be a parent, it could be a family member. I've heard some awesome answers to this. I think they're all awesome.
Oh, for me as a player, now see, we're going back to,
don't forget when
I played, it was MLS wasn't a league. I wasn't watching soccer on TV and stuff. But when I really did get to see a lot of soccer, which I love, was, and again, this is another change. When I was playing, you didn't have all the camps you had now. So when I was playing, and going to camp was a huge thing, but there was a camp near me who was run by Bob Seddon, who's, they have an award for him now for United Soccer Coaches. Like, he was a huge name in American soccer going way back. He passed away, but there's like a scholarship named after him. But he ran the camp. He was coaching at UPenn at the time. But it was the camp, right? So it's like everybody in the southern half of New Jersey went to this soccer camp, right? It was absolutely huge. He had coaches from colleges. He had, I think at the time, I think it was MISL. I think it was Major Indoor Soccer League was in existence. So we had Philadelphia had the Fury and players like that brought in. But one of the things that we had that was so cool was at lunchtime, because it was a full-time camp, was a whole bunch of TVs with old-fashioned VCRs with videotapes of professional games from around the world and the World Cup and this thing. So I didn't play like him. And I'm not a real fan of him as a person, but as a player, for me growing up, it was Diego Maradona. He was just, and of course, growing up and watching him, I didn't know all the off-field stuff either.
Right.
But he was just magical to watch, man. What he could do with a ball at his feet, and what I think I will say he was not given enough credit for is what an incredible passer that he was. But yeah, he's one of the players to me that when you say, why is soccer called the beautiful game? There you go. There's why him, Pele, Cruyff, players like that. Obviously, Ronaldo, the original Ronaldo, the Brazilian. I always call him the original. Ronaldinho, players like that. That's why it's called the beautiful game. Those types of players. And how can you not admire a guy that wins a World Cup by punching the ball into the goal with his hand? And everyone knows it. And he still gets away with it. That's amazing.
God, goal.
Yeah, it's... Wow, and then as a coach. Yeah, that's a tough one. I was speaking of him. I was influenced by Bob Seddon as a coach when I was a player. obviously, my dad was like my first coach. He was a big sports guy, soccer, basketball. My brother went and played. My brother played college basketball. But then as a coach, as an adult and as a coach, it would be really be two people. Oh my gosh. Klopp. I love Klopp as a coach. I love the relationships he builds with his players. I also love the fact that he's an offense, like as good as they can play defense, he's a full throttle. We're going to press you high. We're going to score goals. We're going to attack. I love that as a youth coach specifically and development wise, 100% Andy Barney. He's the founder of the original KC Legends. You probably heard me mention his name before. I think his development philosophy, which is what I've been heavily influenced by, is just phenomenal. I wish it would be embraced by the entire country. I think we'd all be much, much better in terms of our youth soccer development if people did that. This is a guy that I don't think his teams, until they're like U16, U17, I don't think his teams do anything bigger than 2v2 in practices. That's how people think I'm radical. They ought to go check out Andy Barney. But yeah, that's who I would say, I think.
Hey everyone, as we wrap up this two-part series with Coach Greg, if you're looking for more information, check out his podcast. It's The Soccer Specialist. If you're looking for his Facebook group, it is Impact Soccer Performance and Training. There's so much information here. He puts out such great content. I really have enjoyed his information. I have to give a shout out to my wife because she's the one that put me onto this coach and allowed me to really listen to him and what he has to say. He has some awesome programs he offers if you're trying to help your kid get better. If your player's looking for some type of advancement, he has some great little programs out there. And I would highly, highly recommend them all because at the end of the day, what he's trying to do is phenomenal. Hey everyone, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.